Hello and welcome to this very special Christmas episode of Boat Briefing, the very final podcast of the year. My name is Stuart Campbell, and here to help me navigate through a year's worth of super yachting news, and none other than Charlotte Hogarth-Jones and Georgia Boscawen. We're going to talk about some highlights and lowlights from 2024, look ahead to 2025, reveal some exclusive stats about the state of the super yacht industry, and talk about some epic fails I see in the script.
Yeah, starting with the epic fails. But anyway, we're getting in the Christmas spirit, aren't we? You've had a whiskey already.
Yeah, well, it was pre-midday. We're still pre-midday just, but I've had some very nice Glenrothers single malt. Luke from Little Halstock came in, complete surprise out of the blue, and brought us this amazing kind of whiskey sideboard and some 32-year-old Glenrothers single malt. So if you don't know Little Halstock, they're based in Dorset. They're the makers of spectacular cabinetry and leather work. And if you're commissioning a super yacht now, or you're a designer listening to this, absolutely contact Little Halstock. This is my outrageous plug.
Yes, not at all.
Is that allowed?
Just give me a very large drink. But hey, we're catered for here as well, because we've got a bottle of champers. I think we should pop it open.
I think we should.
Do the kick things off?
I think we absolutely should.
Right, I'll open it. And you, why don't you start us off with your epic fails and successes?
Well, before we do that, I should mention this is the first time ever we've actually had proper champagne on the Christmas podcast.
It is, isn't it?
Usually it's... it can't legally be called champagne or even Prosecco. It's basically whatever Morrison's has on sale for about $4.99. But Queenie, Georgia Boscawen, the Queen of Cornwall, went out this morning and brought proper champagne.
I know, because who wants to drink bad champagne or Prosecco?
No one.
Or fake of those two. I just don't really get it. So this is how we do things now. Whiskey in the morning.
Over all over our brilliant recording setup and ruin the podcast in its
gone proper.
Hey! Merry Christmas.
It's Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Alrighty, so why don't we start with looking back at 2024, some highlights and lowlights. Charlotte, why don't you kick us off?
Sure. Okay, well, I mean, it's been such an amazing year, hasn't it? And it's so much travel, as always in this industry, but I couldn't quite believe it when I was going through my calendar and working out a list of everywhere we've all been. I think we kind of are earning our air miles here at Boats International. But yeah, going right back to the beginning of last year, I so enjoyed last year's Superyacht Design
this
Festival.
This year's,
yes.
This year's Superyacht Design Festival. That was so good, just because, you know, the Alpine party there is always a huge highlight for everyone. And there was this kind of crazy moment where I was looking around and everyone was jumping up and down on the dance floor and kind of moshing out to this really naff Eurotrash type music. And it was just amazing to be, you know, some of the biggest, best super yacht designers in the world. And obviously in our pages, they can seem quite high and mighty, but everyone's leveled when they're jumping up and down on a chalet floor, getting hot and sweaty
dancing
in Austria.
Dancing on tables.
No one does a party like a Boat International party. Everyone agrees. It was so much fun. And also just great to see some people I hadn't seen for a long time. And actually the speakers as well, the content, it's always amazing. I always find it really interesting. But the lead speaker from this year, Neil Leach, this AI guy, completely blew my mind. And AI has been such a huge force this year, both in journalism and in super yacht design. And it's something we've talked about a lot and been keeping an eye on a lot. But I remember he said that by 2030, AI will know a billion times more than us. And that just, I think about that all the time. I'm just like, what? How is that possible? So yeah, I love that and can't wait for the upcoming instalment in February.
Well, I think
back in Kitzbühel.
Neil Leach, he was the most engaged with speaker we've ever had at the Super Design Festival. We had to basically hook him off stage because he could have stayed on stage for another hour answering questions from the audience.
Wow, it
was a very well received session.
Yeah, and just really interested in that whole topic, really. And then had a great time in, I feel like I've spoken about it a lot now, in Antiparos. The first regatta that was there, and I was on the winning team. And I should say, genuinely, I was thinking about it, there hasn't been a single racing yacht I have been on that hasn't won.
You know what that means?
I think, well, I definitely don't think it's my sailing skills, which are poor, and I'm a nervous sailor despite quite enjoying it.
You were on Tuera, right?
Yeah.
So shout out to Mike and Tracy Mahoney, the owners of Tuera.
Yeah, they were very kind to
amazing hosts.
Yeah. And they let me have, you know, we had dinner together in the evening and celebrated our win together, which was lovely. But I think I'm such a liability on board. I'm always going to say, oh, what happens if I post this? Oh, is that very modern? And I think it makes people really up their game because they're worried, you know, I might get in the way. So if you'd like to win a race, I'm available. I don't even charge. You can just invite me and you'll probably definitely win. 100% success rate. And it was very hot in Antiparos, though. I know, you know, everyone, very, very sticky temperatures. But there was a captain's briefing in a school gym that was kind of uncomfortable, and a lot of these kind of very good looking Kiwi captains, I think they pulled it off a lot better than I did.
I doubt that.
No, I would say I don't think it was a good look for me. And then the final highlight was, you know, obviously boat show season, very busy. It feels like it's busier and bigger every year. But it was the first year that I was taking part in the Design and Innovation Awards judging. And it was just great to meet that panel of judges. They're all real experts. Everyone has different perspectives that they bring to things, and I just love learning from them about things they'd noticed on board boats that I would never have considered. You know, maybe sometimes things I don't like, and someone would say, well, actually technically that's exactly how it's supposed to be, or mathematically this is correct and here's why. And I found it super interesting. And running around Cannon Monaco, we were kind of like a big group of unruly school kids trying to get from appointment to appointment and juggling umbrellas and that sort of thing. But come the judging, it turned quite serious. And I feel like we've got a really worthy and well fought for set of winners. So I'm excited for when that all comes out.
And when will the winners be revealed?
They'll be revealed in Kitzbühel. On the first night, I believe, at the big ceremony, as per usual. So hopefully there'll be some more happy people jumping up and down on dance floors and tables this year. I know who they are. Hey!
Next year!
Oh, shit! Sorry! I can tell this is going to be a theme continuing. But it was hard to pick highlights. There's been a lot. It's been a good year.
And we should just say tickets on sale now for the Festival. So, yeah. It's a very, very good event. And we've got some great speakers lined up next year in 2025. So book your flights now, buy your tickets, and join us up in the mountains. It's a great, great time.
It's going to be great. And I always feel like after the kind of, I don't know, December, everyone's tired and a bit fusty and you have an unhealthy Christmas, and then a bit of fresh mountain air, some nice sun, some skiing.
And
reconnecting.
A lot of drinking.
A lot of drinking. I mean, yeah, making it sound healthier than it is, but it's always good fun.
It's a theme developing here.
Yes, yeah, exactly. These are my highlights.
Queenie, highlights?
Well, I've been told that I'm not allowed to talk about Antarctica.
You can talk about Antarctica, but you talked about it a lot. And I'm sick of it, quite frankly. I'm sick of hearing what an amazing time you did doing the Arctic sodding plunge.
Okay? Yeah, it was amazing. And I have actually spoken about it on the pod, so I won't bore all of you listeners about Antarctica anymore. But I did also go to Madagascar. That was a massive highlight as well.
I'd love to go to Madagascar.
It's so cool. And if you ever have a chance to, I cannot encourage you to do so enough. And
do you
really
see any lemurs? Don't they have lemurs in Madagascar?
Lemurs and the crazy lots trees. Of baobab.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't actually see those.
No.
But because they're towards the south, but we were up towards the north. But they are there and very cool for super yachts. There's loads of, I've actually just written up the story. So that will be going in the March issue, but it's loads of potential for super yachts there. You can even refuel Madagascar.
Really? Wow. So I would never have thought that. I would have assumed it was kind of, you'd have had to kind of provisioned and everything before going.
So no. You can do that there. Well, I'm not sure about provisioning, but I'm sure you can. So that's obviously a very exciting place. And to be honest, when I was there, the amount of people that messaged me saying, captains and sort of tour operators saying, oh, it's really exciting all there because there's so much that we could do here. So I think it is genuinely really exciting for yachts. Another highlight, obviously, I've just got back from Antigua, which was pretty special. And one of the highlights was the opening of the hut.
Oh, yeah.
So do you know the hut in the Isle of Wight?
Yeah.
So they now have a new restaurant on Little Jumbie, which is the island just quite close to the airport on Antigua. And it's so cool. It's got all the vibe of the restaurant in the Isle of Wight. And so I was very fortunate to go to the opening party. That lots of boozing there as well. So it was really, really cool. And that was kind of, a lot of people were talking about that at the show. So
we were just talking about this outside. I've never been to the Antigua Charter Show. And every year people tell me, you're an idiot for not going to the Antigua Charter Show because it's a great event.
It's so good.
And everyone's in a fantastic mood. So
lots of late nights.
Yeah.
And everyone is in the same kind of mindset, but everyone's doing it, so it's fine, I think. Yeah. And the parties are amazing. Everyone hosts beautifully. And the way that that show is organized is so good. Like, there's so many events. And I think what's really nice is that you'll see everyone at the same event. Mm. So the calendar is pretty universal for everyone that's at the show. So if you're like, oh, I really want to chat to this person, they will probably more likely be there. So it's a really good show for networking. And obviously the yachts are amazing too. Black Pearl. Alfa Nero's relaunched the charter market, which we spoke about last week. So it was epic. I loved it. And it's beautiful out there.
Yeah, love Antigua.
I'm a bit worried because Stuart's looking quite excited about Antigua, and so I'm worried that he's going to steal my place at the show.
It's diarised already, I think, for you, isn't it, next year? No, yeah, I won't threaten your place at the Antigua Charter Show. I'd love to visit it in future. That's a box I need to tick on the Superyacht calendar for sure. At some point in the future.
But you've been to some pretty cool places this year as well. So did you have a travel highlight?
Well, my feet haven't touched the ground this year, really. It's just been a crazy one for travel. I was looking at the BA app last night, just kind of looking at all the flights I've taken with that airline. And
you were blatantly checking your membership status.
Yeah.
What is it? I was just happened to be on the BA app.
What is it?
Wondering how many miles I've done.
What's my status?
Got to be gold.
Gold, of course.
Oh, yeah. My God.
There's boarding BA planes now. I thought you kind of get to group one, you think you're awfully special, but then they've introduced group zero.
Ah.
I don't know how you access group zero, but I'm not in group zero, obviously. So there's even more special people, which is obviously outrageous.
I'm jealous. I'm only on silver, which is quite annoying for the travel editor of Boat International.
Yeah, you need to correct that.
Yeah.
But yeah, lots of travel. Australia a few times, New Zealand for an event. St Barts, obviously, is always a perennial highlight of the calendar. It's just a fantastic event. I missed Palm Beach this year because it clashed with the bucket. But I missed some terrible weather, apparently, in Palm Beach, which is not a bad thing to miss.
It's been a year of bad weather because, of course, like Monaco yacht show as well. That's the first yacht show I've been to that hasn't been. Normally, I kind of pack for tropical climbs and still end up absolutely boiling. And it was filthy. It was pouring with rain. Actually, really, one of my lowlights was getting off the tender to get onto one of the big boats. It got really choppy out there. And everyone just kind of says, yeah, just leap on board. And you think, shit, am I going to be the first person to just jump directly into the sea? But I know I'm not the first person. I haven't done it yet, but I've seen it happen.
It's not. Sometimes those tender transfers are quite, daunting.
Yeah, definitely.
I think Adam spilled onto a boat a few years ago at the Monaco Yacht Show right in front of the owner, just kind of splayed out on the bathing platform.
Hello.
I think it's one of those things.
I'm from Boat International.
You're just waiting for it to happen. I reckon it happens to everyone once in your career.
Oh, I hope not.
I haven't had mine yet. But yeah, horrible weather in Monaco as well.
Yeah, one day it was a total washout. Actually, the dodgy weather thing continued. I've just, one of the recent trips was we hosted an owners club event in Sydney at the end of November. And we usually do it outside on the patio area of the Royal Sydney Yacht Squadron. And we had to bring the whole event inside because the whole weather that week was awful in Sydney, grey, wet.
It did actually affect charter this. So the bad weather at the start of the summer med season, it kind of pushed everything back. So I think a lot of brokers earlier in the year mentioned that they were hoping for an extended season, which again, towards the end of the season, was also wet and a bit grim. So it sort of skewed the data a bit. So I think that was quite interesting. And lots of people were combating that with deals and trying to get bookings. So it was a bit of a strange one for the Russian day. You can probably hear the champagne pouring there strategically. But it was a strange one in terms of charter because of the weather.
I don't follow the charter market as closely as you do, but anecdotally, anyway, it seemed to me that there were a lot more discounts and deals pinging into my inbox, late booking, discounts, all that kind of
thing. And it's weird that, because it really does mess with the market. Because if you're looking to charter, and you know that there's a lot of deals happening. I don't think this happened to this extent, but you will wait for a deal because you know you can get one. So it was a strange thing for people doing that. And a few people mentioned that actually the deals are quite difficult. If someone's offering, you know, a huge discount on a really beautiful yacht, then people are going to go for it.
I think, I wonder what you think of this. This is just kind of anecdotally, but I think it's been quite a hard year. I think people have to work a lot harder to charter their boats than they used to. Because I've definitely had a few owners kind of, you know, serial owners launching new boats. And then when you say, oh, have you got many bookings? They're always kind of, well, you know, not so far, but it's just launched. So we're being realistic about it. And I think it's no longer the case that, you know, you get a great new boat, you put in a pop location and boats, bang, there it goes.
Like new kids on the block. Mm. New yachts are so, like, it's so exciting for the industry, and people really do want to charter something that's new, but you can't really rely on that for the future. So once it's new and, you know, four or five people have chartered it, then everyone's talking about it and we kind of know it. So people do kind of look for that first, second week.
But
they're a turning business. It depends what part of the market you operate. If you are a special yacht in a niche part of the market, like Renaissance. I think we're going to talk about Renaissance a bit later, but they were turning business away from Renaissance. At least that's what I heard anyway. Yeah. And they were thinking about upping the charter price just because there was so much interest in that new delivery.
Yeah.
It was so big and so many amazing spaces and the amount of passengers it could take, how many guests rather it could take on the boat, that it was very busy.
Yeah.
I was amazed. Someone told me, and I don't know whether this is something I was not meant to repeat, and I'm trying to remember who it was, that on both Renaissance and Kismet and a lot of these kind of big boats that are obviously meant for huge charters, actually the charter bookings had largely been by couples who had just taken on board the whole boat and not
for Renaissance as well.
Yeah.
God, can imagine that. You get lost.
And I don't know whether they accepted the booking or not, but I remember being quite shocked because when you look at these boats, you're like, okay, they're obviously designed for someone to take over the whole boat and fill them with their friends, and someone's telling me actually the reality is quite often it is just, you know.
Yeah. I think that's a weird
celebrity
approach.
Couple or whatever.
Imagine being in the gym in Renaissance. It's got like 7 treadmills in there.
So it's kind of ideal if you don't like your other half. Yeah. You never have to see them. You just get on board the boat, you know, separate cabins, separate gyms, separate spas, no problem. Yeah.
But I do think there is something to say about new yachts and new things. I think people will always be excited about them. Mm. But also the returning classics, I think the perennial faves will always do well. So
Eddie Jordan, so Boat's favourite columnist Eddie Jordan has just sold, he reveals in the February issue, Blush's. He talks about the sale of Blush, his 45-metre Perini. And one of the reasons he got rid of it was because charter was weak.
Really?
Forward charter bookings were weak. So it was not quite the asset that it was bought to be. So it's had some very successful charter seasons, that boat. But I think it was looking a bit iffy in the future. So he wasn't terribly disappointed to part with the boat. It's a big asset if it's not being used, and he wasn't able to use it as much as he could, and he wasn't getting the weeks.
So your highlight is being in BA++.
Well, the another one is actually I was really lucky just after the Fort Lauderdale show. I landed back in London from the Fort Lauderdale show, and then was on a plane again that evening to go to the Red Sea.
That is mad.
Yeah, and it was I spent a bit of time in the Red Sea down the coast at a place called Shabara, which was I'd spent a bit of time in the Red Sea before, but not in this area, and it was just gorgeous. The water is completely crystal clear. The corals are actually quite impressive, and it was really
clearer stunning. Than the Caribbean, isn't it? It's really kind of amazing.
And just swimming about in this kind of bath temperature water.
So nice.
And it was beautiful. And the resorts they're building there, the facilities that are coming online all the time are very, very impressive, all incredibly grand in scale.
I'm trying to get out there in January. I'm super interested in it. Like you say, the kind of infrastructure that they're putting in and the investment of the superyacht community is huge. Mm. And it's such a rich, you know, visually rich flora and fauna, that's what I kind of mean, part of the world. So I think that's going to be huge over the next 5-10 years, and really want to see what it's like for myself.
Yeah, as a future winter charter destination. Well, we'll talk about that a bit. We've got some data about boats going from the Med to the Red Sea versus boats going from the Med to the Caribbean, so we'll dig into that into those numbers at the end of the pod. But before we get to that, should we do some low lights?
Oh, God. Go on then.
Well, mine was horrific because it lasted for such a long time. Mine was, I went to a lovely day. It was a shooting event for their the Edmiston clients, which was very lovely.
Just
and
a straightforward shooting weekend.
Just a straightforward shooting weekend.
And you're
weekend.
Quite, you're an excellent shot, right?
I bloody won. Yeah, it was a great day. I won the competition.
So if you want to win a regatta, call Charlotte. If you want to win a shooting day.
Yeah.
Don't call Charlotte.
Call Georgia.
And it was a fab day, and I'm very grateful for Edmiston for inviting me. And it was everyone was heading back to London. So we were outside of London and we're in this amazing convoy that I was kind of quite keen to be a part of, driving back to London. And the engine of my car packed in. It just completely went. And probably just trying to keep up with everyone. And I had to sit on the side.
This is your personal car?
Yeah. And I had to sit on the side of the M4 for 12 hours. Because they wouldn't send me because it was at a weird time. It was 4 o'clock on the Friday, and the car needed a whole new engine. So Edmiston, thank you for that lovely day shooting. But you know,
you can't blame them.
No, I can't really.
Your car must have been on the brink.
Oh well, I don't know about that. But yeah, probably. But that was a sad time because I had to sort of sheepishly make a phone call home and be like, I'm really sorry that something's happened to the car. And
the good news is I won.
I did win. Yeah, I've got this lovely cup. But it was a painful 12 hours. So that was a low light for me, I think. But still fun. Still good times. What about you, Charlotte?
I had some, you know, when you're traveling a lot, you get quite busy and you don't necessarily have the time to put into the packing as you'd have hoped. So there's a point where I got to Monaco and I realised I've got my sunglasses, which I always seem to do. I've got very nice sunglasses. I always forget them. And I had to, it was so bright that I had to buy some kind of impulse sunglasses from a chemist, which I think made me look a bit like I had kind of sight problems. They were kind of blue and tinted and tried to kind of style them out, but I think they looked awful and I had to wear them all weekend. Didn't match any of my stuff. I know it's a minor low light, but that hacked me off. Bad weather, obviously, some kind of very dicey tenders, quite a lot of delayed flights. Spent more time in Nice Airport than I'd have liked, and there's not much going on there once you've perused the fridge magnets and gone to that weird bar with the slide.
I quite like that bar.
It's never bloody open.
Well, it is if you go at normal times.
Yeah, well, I'm normally there kind of in the middle of the night, just staring at the slide, like, oh. And then a weird niche low is, you know, one of the great things about superyachting we don't talk about is just the excess of it. So I had, you know, travel all throughout the summer, all throughout September, drinking lovely wine, eating lovely food. Come the end of Monaco boat show, starting to feel pretty unhealthy, like kind of furry on the inside from just eating an insane amount of carbs and, you know, very tight dress at Monaco party. So I thought, okay, big health kick now. I'm, you know, all in. I'm an extreme person. I'm going to be really healthy. And I stuck to my health kick and then sort of spectacularly fell off the wagon at our Boat Connect event in Milan when Leo Caredu, who some of you listening will know on our commercial team, he kind of took us out for dinner. And you know, having an Italian take you out for dinner, you let them choose the menu. And I ended up eating this. It's called lardo. I'd written down here. Lardo di Coronata. It's basically just pork fat, like warm pork fat on warm bread. And it's bloody delicious. But like, you know, in terms of slipping from your diet, eating endless slices of thinly sliced fat, I think, doesn't come up high on the health front. Doesn't look like Gwyneth.
To shout out to Leo though, he is the absolute master of knowing exactly. You could be in any city in the world and you'll WhatsApp Leo and go, Leo, mate, can you give me the top 5 restaurants? I need to take someone out or something.
That's very
and
good.
Within 5 minutes you'll have a list of restaurants.
Exactly. I didn't blink. If Leo says, I'm Italian, here's the Italian thing you should eat, you just do it. And it was with the guys from Parkway, it was really nice to meet them. If you've not heard of them, they make some amazing stuff and I was learning all about their operation down on the coast, but also while eating huge quantities of warm pork fat, which sounds disgusting and I was hesitant to try it. It is delicious, but if you're hoping to kind of slim down for the festive season, that I wouldn't suggest, that's where you would start. That's my low and high, both.
Yeah, I know, yeah, could be both.
Yeah, exactly.
What about yours?
Actually, I just remembered a new highlight, Sorry, I've just written it down. Tom Cruise. I met Tom Cruise.
Oh, that's really good.
Why did you not mention that before?
Is this recent?
It was in the summer. I went to a wedding.
And like socially as well. That's even cooler.
Tom chopped it in. And so I got to meet the man.
Where did he come up to on you?
He was very small.
Yeah, he's small.
A lovely guy.
Everybody says that. He's meant to be very nice to work with.
He was very nice. And he was with a Marvel, another Marvel actor. I can't remember her name. Pym something or other. And she plays like one of the aliens in the...
Speaking to the wrong people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I wish I could help.
Yeah. My oldest daughter, Emma, she's obsessed with the Marvel movies. So this... it was very, you know... No selfies. You know, the unwritten rule was like, don't go up and go, hey, can I get a selfie?
That's very cool.
But she very kindly recorded a video for my 16-year-old daughter, which Buddhist and the Good Books are about 3 minutes for my 16-year-old daughter. But she loved it. But Tom, we spoke about boats, and he likes his sailing, and yeah.
Because doesn't he have some insane movie system on board one of his boats where he can get kind of view movies before they've been at all released?
That's someone else.
Okay.
I'm not sure Tom's a boat. There's been a few rumours. I'm not sure Mr. Cruise is a boat owner quite yet, despite some scuttlebutt at various boat shows. I could be wrong, but he's definitely in the market. And from our conversation anyway, it will be a sailing yacht. He loves sailing.
Really? I'm surprised by that. I would have had him down for a big IMAX type.
Yeah, I would have done too.
But on the Hollywood vibe, in Monaco, I went on board M and met the owner, who was an amazing guy, American guy, super charismatic, young, and he's been so hands-on with the design of this boat, which is by Studio Indigo. But he's a stunt pilot, and I'm sure he said he had done some of Tom Cruise's stuff. But you come on board the boat and there's this helicopter, you know, pride of place, and his time, and you know, we asked him for a movie of the boat, and he's done his own movie from the helicopter, and he was a really interesting owner. And what a cool job to be kind of Hollywood stunt pilot, and he can fly anything.
There's nothing much sexier than that, is there? What do you do?
Calm down.
Yeah.
Introduce you.
What do you do?
It's very nice.
It's very cool. I think that's probably the coolest job.
Yeah. It was an interesting boat as well. It's got a big bar as you come in, a kind of big iceberg bar. But anyway, that's by the by. But you met Tom Cruise. That's great highlight.
That is very good.
That's much better than eating pork fat.
My memory's so bad. It's all a bit of a blur. I think all the too much time on aeroplanes just muddles your brain.
Mm.
But speaking about aeroplanes.
Yeah.
There's a bit in the script about favourite.
Well, I had a question because I was like, we all fly so much. And yeah. It's one of the things that friends that don't work in CPL say, ask me, like, oh, you're always traveling. Where do you like, you know, best airport, best airline, worst airline?
I've got the worst airline straight in.
Go on.
I don't know why I flew with them so much this year. I was all over Air France and they are just irritating. Yeah. Very small, very everything inside is very small and uncomfortable and old. I'm just not a fan. No. I'm at the point now that if I have to get somewhere with Air France, I'll consider not going.
Oh.
Consider. Depends on the trip. but it's grim. I get very irritated by that. Yeah. You obviously hate Nice Airport.
I don't hate Nice Airport. I just spend a lot of time in Nice Airport, and there's not enough facilities for me. Not enough to do. You know, you go to the prep,
no
you go to the lounge. No, yeah, exactly. I want a driving simulator. Something like that to while away the hours. I like, on the airport front, I like City Airport. I think it's underrated. It's quite close to my house and, you know, I time myself going through security. It's a little sad challenge.
That's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. It gets faster and faster every time, but not over the school holidays. Forget it. During school holidays, it's the slowest airport.
Mm.
Stu?
Best airlines, Qatar. Qatar's for me. They're just sensational. Doha's a pretty good airport.
Massive.
Doha's huge, isn't it? It's got like waterfalls.
Huge.
And
that's where they have the trains as well. They have like these sky rails that go around the airport.
I remember having sushi. You know when you lose all track of time in an airport and having like a sushi banquet and then realising it's like 10 a.m. in the UK.
With a pint.
Exactly.
So the worst airport in the world is, as far as I'm concerned, is Pisa. I really hate Pisa Airport.
Why?
It's always rammed.
Oh, that queue. I've done that queue. And, it's horrible.
Worse than LAX? LAX is pretty bad. LAX is doing horrible, security at LAX, yeah. I've never found to be unstressful. I won't do that anymore.
No.
If there's a second option.
Yeah, the fast track is just, any airport that adds a fast track, is, I just love it. I don't understand why more people don't use that. It's like €4.
And your big low light, I can't believe we haven't mentioned, your big low light is that you got a Christmas sea lion or walrus that has been stolen.
Yeah, it's the mystery. I think someone in the office really dislikes me, or the cleaners made off with some of my gear, because the...
My gear. Your Christmas presents.
My lovely Christmas presents. But one particularly was not great, because every year, Francesco Muzio and the wonderful studio FM Architettura, who do fabulous work, most recently on as featured in Boat International on Akula, the new Rossi Navi Explorer, amazing boat, great owner, amazing interior done by Francesca and her team. Mm. So she sends this incredible Christmas gift every year. And it's usually, you know, it's often focused around food, like pasta making or what have you. This year it was ice cream making. She sent an ice cream making kit, and each year it comes with a cuddly toy. And this year it was a walrus, aww, appropriately for the ice cream theme. So I went home and told the kids that we'd been sent an ice cream making kit and a cuddly walrus. And they were very, very excited. And then I came back to the office the next day.
And someone's nicked it.
And it was gone.
I think it'll be returned.
I hope so.
Yeah, now that it's on the podcast, imagine if you're like, sorry, that was me.
Yeah, it's an investigation.
So I think I'm going to have to very hastily order an ice cream making kit on Amazon.
Oh, it sounds like it, yeah.
And a cuddly walrus to make up for it. But otherwise, it's been a great year at Boat International. We've done what seems like a million events, put out some great issues. The website's been humming. So, yeah, good year. Good, very productive year.
Maybe we should talk about productive years for super yachts then.
Yeah, let's do it.
You know, it's not just us that's been travelling around. Maybe we should take a look at the most travelled yachts in 2024.
This is always a popular story. We look at, obviously through Boat Pro, we're able to track the movement of all super yachts over 24 metres who are... sending out an AIS signal. And so we're just going to go through the top five here of the most travelled super yachts thus far in 2024. And out in front is a boat that is not an Explorer. It's not a particularly massive boat, given the ever-expanding average size of the global fleet. It is a boat called Kadimos, which is a 36.8-metre motor yacht built by Kuash in 2007. So its track shows it operating in the Indian Ocean, the East China coast, the Adriatic, and it followed a long track around the bottom of Africa. But I reckon this one's a bit suspicious, because the track around the bottom of Africa up to the Med is very consistent. So I think the boat was on the back of a transport ship. And the fact that it has an operating range of a little over 2,000 nautical miles and doesn't seem to be putting into any ports up and down the coast suggests to me it was on the back of a boat on its way to the Med. So, I mean, technically, it sort of did do those miles.
Sort of.
Even if it wasn't on its own bottom. But if you do include the fact that it was probably on the back of a ship, Kadimos, a boat that's not even 40 metres, travelled 74,903 nautical miles in 2024, which is just incredible.
Wow.
Albeit slightly.
Yeah, it's just a bit sus.
Yeah,
it's sus.
Who's in second place, Charlotte?
Second is Spirit of the East, which is a 30-metre sailing yacht, which has journeyed 61,378 nautical miles this year so far, which isn't too shabby. She's from 2006 and spent the year cruising up and down the eastern coast of North, Central and South America. Pretty cool journeys there.
But interestingly, these top two are smaller yachts.
Yeah.
You know, they're not enormous explorers. They're not 100-metre fed ships or Ocean Coves or Lursons. They are just...
one's less sus as well. So that has actually...
One's totally legit.
I've
banged on about this to anyone who listened, but I think if you want to do proper exploratory travel, you can't go too big.
Well, I mean, the average... So we learned at the Explorer Yacht Summit, we do a we do a little examination of the Explore Yacht Market, and most Explorers are about 38-ish meters.
Yeah.
That is the, you know, the plum kind of size for average size of an Explorer nowadays.
But the key thing as well is they're getting so much more voluminous. Like the ones we saw in Cannon Monaco, they don't feel that. So many of them I'd be asking, like, hang on, how many meters is this getting? Like 40 meters or whatever. It feels huge. It feels easily comparable because design is getting so much cleverer with how you can use the space. Actually, I don't think you need more than that.
No.
It depends what you want to do. But if you want to do some cool journeys and you want to get your family and friends, you can easily have all your family on board on a sort of 30 to 40 meter boat.
Yeah, and to the point, to your point, I mean, it is, you know, 100 meter boats are limiting in access to various parts of the world. And if you want to go to nose into little coves and anchorages and what have you, it is quite tricky in very, very big boats. Who's in third place, Queenie?
So in third place is Dagon, which is perhaps better known by her previous name, DSSV, Pressure Drop. She is a super touch expedition yacht.
Tough.
Thank you. I will turns out read Wrong anything. She is a super tough expedition yacht and proved it by spending this year operating in the deepest Pacific, racking up 37,613 miles.
I was really pleased to see this because she was sold this year, last year. It used to belong to Victor Vescovo, and I know that he spent a long time looking for a kind of worthy owner. I'm weirdly invested in this project. I spoke to Victor a lot when he owned it, and I know he did some really amazing stuff with it, some really kind of scientifically valuable work. And I know he was really looking for an owner who not only would, you know, buy it off him, but also would kind of put it to good use rather than, I don't know, converting it into something. So it's great to see that this is still out traveling, doing what she was built to do, and going around the Pacific. So I've always really wanted to go.
She's got that tough look about her, look pretty weird in the hanging out in Monaco.
Yeah, she's very kind of more on the rustic, rough and ready side. Exactly. I quite like that. I don't mind that.
In fourth place is a 74-meter Amels M&M, which was delivered in 2022. So M&M's had a really busy year. They've done Patagonia, Mexico, the Caribbean, the northeast coast of the US, the Med and Norway. Two Atlantic crossings thrown in, and altogether she has travelled 32,750 nautical miles so far in 2024.
That's cool. Norway, anyone that does a Norway itinerary, I think. I just love that so much. That's what I'm pushing.
Well, I think of all the boats in the top five, M&M's done not the most miles, but in terms of the disparity of the regions she's visited, I think she's the winner.
Well, last, or, you know, comparing them, in fifth place is Cloudbreak, which probably all have heard from. It's an Abgang and Rasmussen. That's done 32,160. So, yeah, just under what me and M&M has done. The yacht was named after a surfing reef in Fiji and also took the long way around Africa this year, avoiding the Red Sea transit, something we'll talk about in a second, I think, because that's obviously been a bit of a topic for us. But it spent lots of time in Turkey and then the Eastern Med. But yeah,
this is my fave. I love Cloudbreak so much.
Yeah, why?
And I just think she's cool. And she has actually spent time in Madagascar.
Oh, right.
So this was actually a really great example for us before we went to explore Madagascar. It's that Cloudbreak had an amazing time there. It's just a really cool example of what you can do with their itinerary. And rumour has it that they might do it again. So it was a really wonderful way for me to get down there. I was like, Cloudbreak's been, I must go. So, and I just think the boat's so beautiful. I absolutely love that boat.
Yeah, it's, the interior is stunning. Liagra interior is absolutely stunning. So you can see the rest of the top 10 on the website now. We'll put a link in the description so you can have a look at that for yourself. It's a very popular story always. But interesting to note is that quite a few of the results have been affected by the continuing Houthi threat in the southern Red Sea. So we've spoken to a number of owners that have changed their plans quite dramatically to avoid this area. And others have had little choice but to route around the bottom of Africa because insurance is either unattainable or just wildly expensive. And it's just cheaper to burn the fuel to get around Africa to access the Med instead of paying the premium to get through the southern Red Sea. So I spoke to her because this question came up fairly recently in another conversation. So I pinged a well-known insurer that I know, and he basically said, if you're going north to south in the Red Sea, insurance is going to get very expensive if you go beyond Jeddah. So you're fine up until Jeddah, but below Jeddah, bigger premiums are going to apply. And if you're going from the south to the north, and you can even find a policy, it's going to cost you basically the same as your entire year's premium just to do that kind of few days transit through the southern Red Sea. So it's very, very expensive. So it's becoming, you know, unaffordable basically at the moment, even for super yacht owners. And if it's unaffordable for super yacht owners, you know, it's bloody expensive. Mm-hmm. And I actually recorded a podcast early this year with our business editor, Gabby. I was interrogating her about the Houthi threat, and she's very up on the subject. So if you'd like to learn a bit more about what's going on in that region of the world, do go back and have a listen. She's very good on the subject. And I can only hope that for the Red Sea and access and, you know, the environment, frankly, because, you know, you got to burn a lot of fuel to get around the bottom of Africa. Mm. It would be much better to take the shorter route. So I hope things quieten down in that part of the world.
Yeah, as well as the podcast, if you want to look online, Gabby had also done a big report about this. I'm sure we can link to it in the episode description. But speaking to owners that had made the journey and others who had changed their plans to avoid it, but certainly sounds like it's pretty much a no-go at the moment for a whole host of reasons, including sort of cases of mistaken identity as well, I think, were a bit of an issue depending on where your yacht was logged and, you know, people mistaking super yachts for other vessels. Hopefully that changes over the coming year. We'll see.
Yeah, fingers crossed. We should just review the year in brokerage terms as well. So there's been quite a significant drop off in brokerage activity this year. So year to date, as we speak right now, there have been 342 sales on the brokerage market in 2024. That will get better. As a few deals are signed before the end of the year, but there is no hiding the fact that the market has declined. Well, it's off by half from its 2021 high. And it should be noted that that high in 2021 was totally anomalous. We've never seen activity like that on the brokerage market and probably never will again. And at the start of this year, lots of brokers were saying they were expecting a slightly slower year, anticipating that this year's brokerage activity would likely mirror that of 2019, when 410 yachts changed hands on the brokerage market. But unless there's a mad, wild spurt of brokerage activity in the next few weeks, we're not going to get to 410. So we will end up behind those 2019 numbers, those kind of those pre-COVID numbers. So it'll be interesting. We'll do a big end of year brokerage review, and we'll get some comments from leading brokers about their experiences in 2024 and their anticipations for 2025. But I realize, actually saying this now, that we didn't do a, because usually at the start of the year we do a kind of where's the brokerage market going to end up at the end of the year, and we have a little competition. I don't think we did that this year, did we?
I don't think so. I think it's definitely, it's further behind than I expected, because I would say earlier in the year brokers were fairly, I don't know, not buoyant's not the word, but I think this is lower than they would have predicted.
Yeah, I mean, at the start of the year, I would have said we'll end up basically bang on 2019 numbers.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And you're right. Well, not quite,
sort
though.
Of.
Not quite.
Close.
Close, but
I think there's been so many unknowns this year that have had, you know, the US election is a massive one.
There has been
so
weird
many things where people have been kind of holding fire. So the first quarter of next year will be really interesting to see what happens then.
Well, it'll be certainly interesting given, it'll be interesting tracking Trump's impact on the brokerage market. As we know, and I wrote in my last editor's letter, actually, the lots of anticipation for the deregulation of markets and a kind of a Trump bump. I mean, at Fort Lauderdale Boat Show, there was no hiding the fact, the glee many people were. That was pre-election, I should add, but people were anticipating a Trump win, and they were very excited about the potential of his impact on the brokerage market particularly. So we shall see, and we'll track it very, very closely, and we'll cover it on our Boat Business channel. We'll just look at some of the biggest news stories of 2024. And the biggest one is obviously a tragic one. And many of you will have followed the story of Beijing and its sinking, and the awful events that unfolded following that stormy night in August, just off the north coast of Sicily, when very sadly seven people lost their lives in the sinking of that sailing boat. But by far and away, that was the biggest and most engaged with story on the Boat International website this year. And that story will roll on and on as we learn more about exactly what happened, and the testimonies from the crew are made public and investigations are concluded, the boat's hopefully raised. We can learn about exactly what happened and obviously how to prevent tragedies like that in the future.
So I think that's happening in January, that they're trying to kind of bring the boat up, and then she'll be transported to Palermo for a kind of forensic examination. And also the inquest into what happened with the deaths on board resumes in April. So I think at the beginning of next year, that story will kind of pick up and we'll start to find out a bit more about what happened, because at the moment it's still, you know, somewhat unsure, I'd say.
Lots of people have theories, and there's been lots of interviews with people speculating about what happened. I mean, the precise events are still unknown to most people. I've spoken to some very wise people who have some pretty good ideas about what happened that evening. But until it's all on the record and the inquest is concluded, I think it's certainly unwise to speculate on the record about exactly what happened.
So
we will discover in due course.
But it's been a bad year for superyacht disasters. I'm permanently amazed. And what amazes me now as well is that almost all of these stories, you can see it. For every story about a collision or a fire or a sinking, there's a video of it on someone's iPhone that you can watch live.
Especially that the Lady More and the Venus.
Yeah, collision. I mean, amongst the other top news stories was the 105-meter Lady More colliding with Steve Jobs' former superyacht Venus. That was down to weather, a kind of sudden violent squall, they said, with winds of 50 to 55 knots. You can see that online. Then also so many disasters over August. The 31-meter Wally, sailing yacht Wally Love, was washed ashore following a storm in Formentera. And then the 47-meter Heesen superyacht Atina sunk following a fire in Olbia, also in August. And also in August, bad times, the 90-meter Lursen superyacht Ice collided into a 31-meter Newmarine yacht in Turkey. And you can see that as well on our site. Watch it happen. It's quite shocking, kind of seeing this enormous boat in slow motion just, you know, chip the tip off another one. It's awful.
Yeah, there was some video revealed from on board the smaller boat as this enormous 90-meter was
terrifying.
Was hurtling towards it. It did look quite scary.
Some good news though. There's also been quite a lot of good news this year. So the 136-meter superyacht Flying Fox was removed from the US sanctions list and is now available to charter globally, which we were very pleased to hear. And it's been quite the saga, but it's wonderful to have her back in the market and now available with Blue Water Yachting Dubai. So I was very pleased to see that back in the... back on the water and cruising around.
I was reading about her facilities. She has a churrasco oven, and I had to look up what that is. It's a Brazilian steak oven. There's a Brazilian steak oven and the first cryo sauna ever installed on a yacht. Steak and saunas, what could be better? That's great that she's back.
What else we got? What was the cover of the January issue? Special One.
The world's largest sport fisher. Most distinctive looking boat we've had on the cover for a while, I'd say. Crazy looking boat, but I'm really interested in Special One. So it is just like a massive sport fisher.
I think big sport fishers are really weird for us over here, because it's a massive thing over in the US, and then seeing a huge sport fisher, it's just a bit bonkers.
But there was a lot of debate about her actually at the BDAs, because she's got some amazing facilities on board. Like, she's got this really cool lift, and I forget how it works, so Rupak are going to hate me for this, but it can kind of pop you up between the floors using some clever technology. But also what I love about it is, you know, you think a sport fisher has all this amazing sport fishing kit out on deck, but inside the interiors are luxurious and there are loads of really clever tweaks, like, you know, down into the cabins instead of steps, there are little slopes because the owner wanted it all to feel easy and comfortable. And, you know, it looks sporty and kind of, I don't know, like a sort of sporty day boat, but actually inside it feels very, very luxurious.
Do you like sport fishers?
Yeah, I do. I know I don't sound it, but I am actually Australian.
Oh, here we go.
And it's quite a scene in Australia, the sport fish scene, and I do like this one a lot because I track the project very, very closely. Obviously, we're close to the Rypak guys, and we made a very cool video with Rypak a couple of years ago, all about holistic design, relating it to pizza making, bizarrely. Because the base, I think we said the base was the naval architecture, the topping, the passata was the exterior design, and the toppings were the interior design. And Rypak are very well known for doing all three very capably. So yeah. On Special One, they did the naval architecture, they did the exterior design, and they did the interior design.
Amazing.
So obviously perfect relates to a pizza, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I know the owner is particularly happy with his very large new fishing boats. That's fantastic for them. That'll be interesting to track next year on AIS to see where Special One goes.
Yeah.
Some of the premium fishing grounds, hopefully, around the world. And talking about someone else who wants to go around the world, although his plans might be scuppered now, he's signed a deal with Aston Martin, is Adrian Newey. Who's going to tell us about Adrian Newey?
I'll do it. I didn't know anything about F1. So Adrian Newey revealed his plans to focus on sailing following his retirement as chief technical officer at Formula One's Red Bull Racing Team. The interview, hosted by Oyster Yachts and moderated by fellow Formula One legend Eddie Jordan, was held at the Yacht Club de Monaco during the historic Monaco Grand Prix. He said, "I feel a bit tired at the moment."
Can I say, I love that quote. I feel a bit tired at the moment. We've all been there. Like, good old Adrian. Everyone said, "How do you feel, Adrian?" He said, "I'm just a bit tired." Yeah, fair play.
He said, "I feel a bit tired at the moment, but to walk away from Red Bull Racing was a very hard decision." Newey said, "Do I go again or do I enjoy my Oyster Yacht and sail off into the sunset?"
Well, I don't think he will be sailing off.
I was going to say, he won't be joining Eddie.
Because
he doesn't have it anymore.
Well, Eddie's still got his smaller Oyster.
Okay. Fine.
But Adrian's now on Signed Team up. Aston Martin. So the plan to sail around the world on his new Oyster will have to wait, I think. And so they were the biggest stories on the website this year. Some dark stories, some disasters, a few accidents. But some good news too, which is fantastic. And some great big new launches. So we thought we'd conclude actually by looking at where the superyacht fleet is spending the festive period. And I should preface this always by saying that this data is brought to you by Boat Pro, the superyacht industry's leading and award-winning market intelligence service. So I really tested our data team recently with looking at where boats go from the Med in the winter season. It's it required a real deep dive into the data, looking at winter destinations. And we'll start with the Red Sea because we referenced it earlier. And we should provide the caveat that all these numbers for 2024 are year to date. So obviously there's still a few weeks of the year to go. So there is room for improvement as the year concludes. But so far, 69 superyachts have travelled from the Med to the Red Sea, which is slightly down on previous years and could be possibly explained by the fact that there remains a Houthi threat in the southern Red Sea. So in 2023, 94 superyachts made the trip down through the Suez Canal from the Med. And in 2022, the number was 102. So the numbers are a little down on previous years. The Caribbean, conversely, obviously is a much more popular destination for Med yachts crossing over. So there have been 321 crossings from the Med to the Caribbean so far this year, as of today. In 2023, that number was 383. And in 2022, it was 376.
So quite a lot down then.
A bit down, but as we'll see, the Caribbean season is better than in previous years. And I'll explain why in just a sec. So everyone sort of assumes every year there is this enormous migration of yachts across the Atlantic as winter approaches. But in actual fact, it's only a very small share of Med yachts that make the crossing, around 10% of all sup yachts based in the Med. So according to Boat Pro, which tracks, as mentioned, all yachts over 24 meters that we can pick up on AIS, there were 3,413 sup yachts operating in the Med this year. And of those, just 321 have crossed to the Caribbean thus far.
I would have thought it was so much more than that.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting.
Because everyone just say, oh, the seasonality, Med Caribbean. But really, the numbers are quite small in relation to the overall size of the fleet. So that tells me, at least, there is an opportunity for the Red Sea to grow as a winter cruising destination. If the infrastructure and services are put in place and it's marketed well, I can definitely see the action in the Red Sea growing, because it's so much closer, obviously, than the Caribbean. But turning back to the Caribbean, we count 399 sup yachts there as of this recording, which is up on previous years. So it's looking to be a much busier Christmas and New Year period for that part of the world. So last year, in the week before Christmas, there were 362 yachts operating. This year, there are 399. So interestingly, fewer yachts crossing from the Med, but numbers are up overall, which suggests that there's more US owners coming down from particularly Florida to enjoy their winters in the Caribbean. Good news for the Caribbean. Overall, it's looking up. It's looking to be a strong season. And there are some big boats down there already. I had a look at who's in St. Bart's already for the famous Christmas and New Year's parties on that island. And who's there? Kismet, the new 122-meter Lursen. Chaos, the 110-meter Ocean Co. Moonrise, the 99.95-meter Fed ship Eos, the big sailing boat from Lursen at 92.93 meters, and Ecstasy, the 85.95 meter Fed ship, are already anchored down off Gustavia, ready to go.
What a lineup. That's a party right there, just those boats. Amazing.
Absolutely. And if you want to join them, I think
It's not too late.
Our travel and charter editor.
I was wondering, when is too late?
I was actually chatting to the Fraser US team about this, and they say, absolutely not too late for Christmas. The team said, we still have excellent options available for Christmas, and we love to make the last minute charters work. So bring all offers. Some yachts will even be willing to take less than 1 week. And if they have a fully executed contract and funds in escrow, we can start a charter often if the yachts are already in location and ready to go. So it's not too late.
So that's interesting. So if you wanted to do a 3-day charter over New Year in St. Bart's.
Yeah, you can do it.
You still can. Okay.
I think 3 days is considered pretty close to crunch time. But if you want to make sure that you've got your provisioning sorted, your itinerary done, the restaurant bookings, if you want them sorted out. So I think that's pretty much how close you can get. Ocean Independence, however, said, it's never too late, but they also said booking 3 days in advance it's needed. So you can still get a Christmas charter and definitely New Year charters. There are plenty of yachts that are available for New Year's. So you just have to look. We're actually going to do a yachts available for New Year's this week. So if you're in the market, then just have a look.
You buying?
I don't know yet. Maybe I'll leave it to 3 days in.
And I think that brings us to a happy conclusion to 2024. Charlotte, Georgia, thank you very much.
Thank you. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Yeah, that chaperone was great.
Yeah. What a fun time.
Yeah, that slipped down.
It's gone straight to my head.
I know, mine too. I'm amazed we made it to the end. Thank you.
Same.
And there's still a whole bottle of Baileys.
Oh my God, we're going to get going on that.
Yeah, January podcast.
Well, thank you all for tuning in throughout 2024 to the Boat Briefing Podcasts. Hopefully, we'll have a nice owner interview for you coming up over the Christmas period. Charlotte, you spoke to a very well-known Greek owner.
Yeah, that was Mr. Nikos Pateras. Lovely guy. He owns so many boats and has owned so many boats. He owns a Wally, he owns Adamus 5, and he just messaged me saying he had just bought a Sport Fisher. And I said, that looks like a special one. He said, oh, I'm just a humble Greek ship owner. And I thought, okay, we'll see.
With three superheroes.
Yeah, amazing business brain, amazing character. Definitely give that one a listen. He was fantastic to talk to.
Fantastic. Well, we'll hopefully get that one live over the Christmas period to keep everyone entertained. In the meantime, yeah, thank you very much. Hope you all have a wonderful Christmas, and we will see you in 2025.